Hello, I am Mayor Watt. That is ometown.com. I stream here on Twitch, and then it gets copied over to YouTube and to various podcast locations. Just do a search, you'll find Ometown. I had been planning on streaming another show, Strange New Worlds. Not the video part of it, but some of the audio and talk about the season one, episode one, like I did with Friends. I'm planning on doing another Friends episode tomorrow. So I'm going to do Friends every other day, and as well as the Ometown Daily News show. And I will be trying to find a better solution, because right now, the way that things work out, I can't grab even segments of the audio because of my configuration. But I'll get it resolved, and I'll try and get it done by the weekend, and we can do this on the weekend. I'm trying to put together another show for the weekend, which is the Hatch Ideas show, which will focus on intellectual property and business transformation, talking about business, technology, and society. Usually that is the nature of my shows, where I am the host. I talk in those three main areas. That's my area of expertise. That said, today's episode for the Ometown Daily News show is June 14th, 2022. It's episode 164. Let's get into today's news. The very first article is, here's the age when Americans get the least amount of sleep. Full disclosure, I don't really sleep much. A lot of research has gone into it, and what it comes down to is there's a lot of issues that are involved with not sleeping very much. Usually things like dementia are spoken of, that if you don't get enough sleep, you basically don't get to reset your brain often enough or for a longer period of time. And so it doesn't discharge or reorganize, because really people don't know what the purpose of sleep is. And what its effects are. But we do know one thing. If you don't get enough sleep, you end up tired. If you don't get enough sleep, or if you delay sleep, you start hallucinating, visually audible hallucinations. You have a harder time cogitating things. So your entire cognition starts to fall off as you avoid sleep. Some people do it because they are working long hours. Other people do it because of insomnia. My entire lifestyle has been staying awake until basically you get about 2 to 3 hours of sleep a night. Mainly because I like working on a lot of projects. I like reading the news and interacting, consuming information. And it tends to keep me up. So this article here, it says, story at a glance, Medical College of Georgia, MCG, investigators used data from a nationally representative sample of 11,279 participants, age 6 or older, each of which wore a device on their non-dominant wrist that measured movement and gauged sleep. The participants wore the device for 24 hours a day over a period of 7 days, finding generally the nighttime sleep declines with increasing age. Yet the study suggests Americans sleep efficiently. Let's go over and click this link. It's over at The Hill. The article, it says, it has a little caption that says, people think children and adolescents sleep later, and we found this. During middle age, people sleep less, and our findings support that objectively, one of the study's authors said. So they sampled a large number of people for this. Now, is it really representative, nationally representative? I don't know. A random or pseudo-random sampling of 11,279 participants from age 6 and up. I don't know. And there's a lot of age in that. So I don't know if you can have really a representative participant from all of those age ranges and at each of those ages, you know, let alone ranges of it, but, you know, individual ages, it seems like it's a stretch. Participants wore a device for 24 hours a day, so it isn't necessary to put on a device when you're going to sleep to measure how much you're sleeping. Like my Apple Watch detects when I'm asleep, finding generally that nighttime sleep declines with increasing age. Yeah, we start to fall asleep in the middle of the day. Yet the study suggests that American sleep efficiency, I don't know about if we are really sleeping efficiently. The time one is actually asleep compared to time carved out for sleep also declines with age, but tends to stabilize from age 30 to 60. So Americans get the least amount of sleep around age 40. Yeah, we're that's heading towards midlife crisis. So I can imagine you're trying to figure out your finances and your future and your kids and marriage, if marriage, you know, there's a lot going on at age 40. And if you don't do it at 40, then you kick the can down to 50. And if you don't do it then you're pretty much on the decline of planning. You'll start worrying about stuff at 50 and 60. So when there's more years behind you than there is in front of you, you kind of start to worry about different things. It says here, traditionally people think that sleep efficiency goes straight down with age. But we did find that there's a stable period from ages 30 to 60 years old that you have quite stable sleep efficiency. Yeah, I don't know. I'd be curious. I'll have to hunt down the actual article, the research paper. It says Americans get in a new study. So I'm going to click the link. I very rarely click links inside the links that are aggregated over at Ohmtown. But I'm going to click this link and it'll take us over to nature.com, which is the source of this. Oh, it didn't actually do it. Weird. My trackball is acting funny. So it's epidemiology of accelerometer. Oh my God, my brain. Epidemiology of accelerometer based sleep parameters in U.S. school age children and adults. And it's N. Haynes 2011 to 2014. That's an interesting time frame, but they ran it for that period. Is that really the time frame? Obviously there is only so much information that I'm probably going to be, oh no, it's publicly available apparently. So typically when I read a research paper, you read the abstract, to get some basis of understanding of what they did and how it turned out and what their conclusions are. And then you can go down all the way to the very end and look at the conclusions. Let's see if they have it listed that same way. Wow. So discussion. I want to see something else. So these are all their references. So they receive funding from NIH and AAH, and SS receives funds from NIH. All authors have stated that there were no financial or other relationships that might lead to a conflict of interest. So this is something that I always look at. It changes the tone of what you are reading. There have been times where I've read a research paper on like GMO or something like that, and it comes from the funding comes from an organization that is either pro or con GMO or whatever it might be. I'm just using it as an example. But there's always this inherent known bias and you have to kind of weigh the results. It's kind of like reading a research paper about cigarettes, and that's funded by a cigarette manufacturer, and they're deducing that, oh, don't worry, cigarettes are not really the cause of cancer, lung cancer. So once you read either the discussion or the conclusions, you can go back and look at all of the rest of the results. because it shouldn't be a surprise what you read once you read the abstract and the conclusion. Just kind of go from there. So I want to see something. So the National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey. Interesting. Who had at least 3 days of valid sleep parameters calculated from 7-day, 24-hour accelerometer recordings. Okay. So sleep duration showed a U-shape association with age and reached the minimum at age 40 and started to increase again around age 50. The clock time for sleep onset delayed with age and reached the maximum at about age 20. That's really interesting. Let's look at some of these results. So some of the metrics were on gender and race, and I guess just basic time. Age. So pure age and the amount of sleep. So that's interesting. Sleep duration and sleep efficiency. So how fast you go to sleep. Interesting. Okay, folks, let me continue on with the news. But now you know what to look for. The next article is private space company botches second NASA mission after launch malfunction. Yeah, this is kind of rough. Astra has launched about 10 craft into space. This last one with some microsatellites. They're little 4-inch by 4-inch cube satellites. You know, you can hold them in your hand. Apparently it malfunctioned and I don't know where, I don't know if they know where it ended up, but it's off in the ocean somewhere. Hopefully somebody goes out and they actually get it and return it. Yeah, and there's a lot of proprietary information, some basic research, fundamental research. And it really bothers me that fundamental research is very costly, time consuming. I mean, it's something that is very important to the economy, but it costs the economy quite a bit. And it slows down, I guess, the evolution of technology, society in general. And why do I say it like that? It's because somebody else can come in and steal the fundamental research that has been done by other people. And then they just kind of slap their badge on it and suddenly it's theirs. And I think it's just fraud. It's criminal. It's absolutely criminal. Well, anyway, that's neither here nor there. The reason why I said it is because this equipment is out there now in the ocean somewhere and somebody can go and get it. The malfunction, which was caused by a premature shutdown of one of the rocket engines, marks the company's second botched attempt to launch NASA satellites this year following a February mission that ended in failure when the rocket spun out of control. Yeah, that happened near the edge of space, actually. Astra noted that the first stage of the rocket, which is located at the bottom of the vehicle, operated normally, propelling the vehicle along its planned trajectory for several minutes after its launch from Cape Canaveral. Yeah, that doesn't really help the budget. This is an article over at Vice.com by Becky Ferreira. It says, Astra shared its regrets, quote-unquote regrets, or regerts, over the loss of the NASA spacecraft following a premature shutdown of one of its rocket stages. Yeah, it's going to be very expensive for this company. Or taxpayers if they're getting grant money. I'm not sure. I'd have to go and look. Astra won a $7.95 million contract from NASA. Let's rephrase that, folks. It's from taxpayers. To deliver a total of 6 TROPICS satellites into orbit over the course of 3 launches. It's not known when the company will send the remainder of the constellation, which consists of small spacecraft known as CubeSats, into orbit. Yeah, there were Just a few of them. I think there was four or six. Anyway, it doesn't really matter. They're gone. And now all of that money is going to have to be spent again to do this equipment. But maybe it's like contact, right? Why pay for one when you can do two for twice the cost? Anyway, this next article, I'll keep moving through the news today. The next article is in the Smack Talk channel. What's new for HomeKit from WWDC, which is the Worldwide Developers Conference, on HomeKit Insider. And they have a HomeKit Insider podcast. And so I won't be able to talk too much about this, but let's click the link. It takes us over to Apple Insider. And Andrew O'Hara is the author of the article. And so let's see. Insteon appears to be reinvigorated. Its servers unceremoniously came back online, though there has been no comment from the company itself. And this is one of the things that bothers me. So in their podcast, they say everything new from HomeKit in iOS 16, Matter, Home App, and more. Everything new in the CarPlay. In iOS 16, SmartWing solar panel, Insteon's smart home hubs are back online for now, which really, again, it bothers me that something can go, like, for instance, my laser is connected to an external resource that if they go offline because they missed their budget forecast and now they have to shut down, I basically have a lump sitting in my lab, and it bothers me. So I'm hoping that there will be some failover solution for this. And I'm actually looking at other solutions now because of it. I don't think that I should be beholden, but even the processing is offset. It's done outside of the laser. Again, throwing probably proprietary G code back into the laser for it to cut. So thankfully my CNC isn't like that. Anyway, they don't really have too much in terms of the, oh, and it's a YouTube video as well. So they're kind of doing what I'm doing, or maybe I'm doing what they're doing. So they've announced a new set of AirPlay 2 enabled speakers. The new LSX2 have notable improvements over the original model, including an HDMI input and revamped wireless system. I really hate wires. Anyway, go over to Apple Insider, follow the link through Ometown, and you'll be able to listen to that podcast as well. The next article is over in the Hatch Ideas channel, and it is crypto lender Celsius is freezing withdrawals after its founder promised to reinvent the financial system and never act like a traditional bank. Well, if you've got money in there and your money is frozen and the market is still declining, which crypto's down to around 20, well, Bitcoin is down to around 22,000, actually dipped below 21,000 earlier this morning. So crypto lender Celsius, I didn't get to finish that thought. One second. So they froze withdrawals, and crypto is not federally insured, folks. So if the money is lost because the market downturns and you can't pull the money out, why? Because the money isn't pegged to reality. It's pegged to fear of missing out. So your one Bitcoin that's worth $60,000 that you have sitting in Celsius is now $22,000. And if you tried to sell it, but it was blocked, you can try and sue. But if the money isn't there for them to do the withdrawals, and the money isn't there for you to sue them for missing, $44,000. Even though you trade at the market value, I'm sure people are, stepping up saying, well, I purchased my Bitcoin at 35,000 and I wanted to, mitigate my losses by exiting when it was 28,000. And you just cost me the difference between 28 and 22. And you're forcing me to risk. So there's lawsuits there, but I would say that there are lawsuits there, but, your money is pegged to the US dollar and everybody's perception of what a Bitcoin is, because a Bitcoin is nothing. It's a virtual currency that's uninsured. It's pegged to something that's real based, which is the GDP, which is the US dollar, which is not insuring your investment in Bitcoin. So if you didn't realize that, that's what it is. Crypto lender Celsius has frozen all withdrawals, swaps, and transfers between accounts. The network's founder, Alex Mashinsky, pledged to revolutionize finance and has said that he hates the banks. Celsius froze accounts just a month after Terra's Luna cryptocurrency crashed to zero. They want to bring that back, by the way, not Celsius, but major crypto lender Celsius Network froze all of its customers' accounts on Monday. That's just bad for business. I'm sure some people are saying this is good for crypto. Anyway, this is an article over at businessinsider.com by George Glover or Glover. I'm not sure how he pronounces his name. And let's see if there's anything else in there. Mashinsky also promised in the past to unbank the banked and bank the unbanked, whatever that means. With cryptocurrencies plummeting, Celsius moved to freeze all withdrawal swaps and transfers. Just kind of restating what they say in this article. The project's founder, Do Kwon, who had previously mocked one of his critics for being poor, has since been accused of siphoning up to $80 million a month from Terra before two cryptocurrencies crashed. Yeah. And that's kind of how it goes. I mean, you don't... a lot of CEOs pay themselves first, and that's kind of what this is. You can bet that their draw has been sustained. If you are the owner of a business, if you're the CEO of a business, your valuation is pretty much the only thing that you're suffering from is not getting a big enough bonus because of poor performance of the enterprise. That's kind of how it's written in the employment contract. And then you can be replaced by the board, but you can bet your butt that the stakeholders are still getting their draw. The principals are still getting their draw, regardless of the performance of the business. They'd rather fire people. And I'm not talking about them in particular. I'm talking about CEOs in general. Business owners in general. And the phrase that I've used when I've made comments to others about justifying firing 500 people is, well, if my business fails because I kept 500 people on, that means that the business fails at its core, and that means 1,000 people lose their jobs. So, you know, I would rather fire 500 people than keep running for 6 months and then have to fire 1,000 people. And not only do I not have any ongoing concern, but 1,000 people are out of a job as well. So there's a lot to it. And you can get into greater fidelity of this discussion if you are interested in it. But that is really the real justification. But the social aspect of it is, if you're the owner of a business and you're getting your draw and it's $1 million a year, yet if you were to lower your draw to $150,000 and survive more on your previous years of draw, then why not do it? But that's not necessarily what happens. Sometimes, depending on the CEO, so depending on the owner of the business, they will draw until this thing is like a lawn dart stuck in the dirt. And you know what happened with lawn darts, right? They were outlawed here in the U.S. Anyway, if you told me you owned all the Bitcoin in the world and you offered it to me for $25, I wouldn't take it, Buffett said at a Berkshire annual shareholders meeting last month. What would I do with it? But Warren Buffett is also the one that owns Berkshire Hathaway, and they don't split their stock either. So there's a lot of value just kind of tied up in that mentality of not liking non-fundamental, non-holistic understanding of a business. One method is both pragmatic and thoughtful investment, and the other, where all you do is shoot from the hip because you see an upward trend in your technicals and you get on board early and you get out when you have a perceived peak and you keep on doing it again and again and again, which is basically day trading. That is creating wealth with zero value. There's no ethical or moral compass there other than essentially it is to drive the price up until it peaks and then you sell. And as you sell, the price drops because the perceived value of it is declining. And then you're not really looking at fundamentals when you do that kind of investing. And that's basically crypto. Fear of missing out. Everybody wanted to get on board because they could drive the profit up, the value up. But stock market, crypto, it's all the same. Money chasing money. And sometimes people go from near poverty to millionaire status simply because they happen to be an early adopter and leave their USB key with Bitcoin laying around. Anyway, the next article is one of those I'm hoping for self-fulfilling prophecy kind of a things. Let me copy this the right way. Boink. Okay. So this next article is in the Hatch Ideas channel. Bitcoin could easily recover to 100,000 over the next 24 months, powered by tech developments and macroeconomic improvements, says Anthony Scaramucci. This is, I think, the same person that they refer to in the media as the mooch. The sell-off in Bitcoin and Ethereum are buying opportunities, Anthony Scaramucci said. On Monday, he still sees Bitcoin going up to $100,000 over the next 12 to 24 months. Yeah, right. I'm improving an improving macroeconomic picture will be a factor in helping crypto prices recover. This is just dreaming. Bitcoin's beatdown is a buying opportunity before the cryptocurrency makes a sustained turnaround to advance to $100,000 over the next 12 to 14 months. No, 12 to 24 months. I think there's a typo. Either here is a typo or up there is a typo. Somewhere there is a typo. So if it's 24 months, this is kind of like saying the end of the world is nigh and then kicking the can down the road as you start approaching those deadlines. The whole thing about winning, you know, oh, I'm winning. No. You're still losing. It's still not happening. Don't try to make fetch happen. It's not going to work. So Bitcoin is getting hammered, but its volatility is inherent in its particular system. It's not pegged to anything real internally. It has an external influencer, and that is the gross domestic product and the people who are perceiving Bitcoin to have value and the value of Bitcoin in US dollars. Well, people are taking the money and running. And people aren't accepting Bitcoin, and the market, the real market, the not just the stock market, but the CPI, inflation, GDP, job outlook, etc., conflict. All of this is weighing on people and they want real money. And I have a whole problem with some economic concepts that I'd love to have people in the know come and chat with me. He appeared as Bitcoin during Monday's session sank 15% to $22,829. Yeah, this morning it fell to that. Actually, wait, let me see something. So earlier today, it actually dropped to $20,834. So that was this morning. Okay, so I'm going to visit the source here. It's over at Business Insider. The article is by Carla Mosey. And Skybridge Capital. Okay. Yeah, I could care less about what Scaramucci is saying. But don't, I mean, if you have the ability to buy a $23,000 Bitcoin, then go for it. Or 21,000. It's actually at 22,608. So it's gone up a little bit since it's open this morning. But if you have the ability to do that, then you're going to do whatever you think is going to, develop some income. But the fact that, so year over year, it's down $25,000. Its peak was 66. So you're down 60%, 66%, and sitting at $22,000 since its peak. Dun dun dun. So roughly, let's see. Yeah, its peak was 67,582 on the on November 2021. Anyway, don't count your blessings that there will be ever any stability in Bitcoin. It's just not going to happen. The next article is Stanley Morgan CEO James Gorman sees 50-50 odds of recession ahead. I've been battling with the news all day for the last 24 hours, people saying that the economy is doing fine, Bitcoin is going to recover, job market is looking up, the supply chain issues are going away. There's no issue with recession. And then you hear the other side where all hell is breaking loose. And really, the people that are worried about this kind of stuff, recession ahead, et cetera, they're worried about it at a different level. But the regular Joe is dealing with the CPI and the cost of goods. Goods, like just food. Going and getting a steak is very expensive now. Fast food is starting to become what table-seated food was is costing, right? So I go to like Burger King or McDonald's or whatever, and for three people, it's costing $40. And you go to a regular restaurant, and you're talking about it being $60. And up. I mean, this is like entry level, right? So everything is getting more expensive. And I hearken back to a bygone age, just a year and a half ago, where I heard a food supplier saying that the era of cheap food is over. And when I paid attention to that, I was like, wow, what is that's a really weird indicator. Let's go look into this. And I basically found then, over a year and a half ago, that it's because prices for oil and gas are going up because of greedflation to recover the pandemic losses. So this article is over at CNBC.com, and it's by Hugh Son or Son. I don't know how they're pronouncing their last name. It's possible we go into recession, obviously, probably 50-50 odds now, Gorman said Monday at a financial conference held by his New York-based bank. That's up from his earlier 30% recession risk estimate. I don't think we're falling into some massive hole over the next few years. I think eventually the Fed will get hold of inflation, he said. You know that it's going to be bumpy. People's 401k plans are going to be down this year. And then the final keynote is still the Fed waited too long to raise rates, which gives them less room to maneuver should a recession begin, Gorman said. The CEO began discussing the risk of recession with his internal committees last August or September when it was clear that inflation was going to be more persistent than hoped. Well, it's because of the producers causing prices to increase because they want their margins to be massive so that they can pay millions of dollars to a CEO and stakeholders instead of bearing the economic burden for the last 2 years across everybody. But they are profiting while the regular Joes are still getting crushed by inflation on top of stagnant wages. And the only people that are making more money are the ones that seem to be politically connected and not necessarily skills. It's, again, the old standby of it's not what you know, it's who you know. So 50-50 odds of recession? Yeah, I think it's more on the 80-20. It's the Pareto rule of inflation. Let's continue on to the next article. The next article is in the Hatch Ideas channel. U.S. wants companies to buy Russian fertilizer as agricultural commodities market spiral and a global food crisis looms. Yeah. The U.S. has been quietly pushing companies to ramp up Russian fertilizer trade as a global food crisis looms. Bloomberg reports this year Russian fertilizer exports have fallen 24%, per the report. Meanwhile, Ukraine has over 25 million tons of grain, sunflower oil, and other goods stuck in the country. That's because Russia has basically taken over the ports. That is really the goal of what I think this invasion of Ukraine is all about, getting to that warm water ports to make their exfiltration of in-country resources theirs and not Ukraine. So as I kind of suggested on day one of this invasion, the objective really is to take enough of Ukraine over so that Crimea is completely contained within Russian control, and there isn't, it's a broader range of land that's allowing Russia to control everything from Crimea all the way up to Russia and not have to do anything close to Ukraine. I figured that they'd come all the way over to the river that bisects Ukraine, but that hasn't happened. So good luck to Ukraine, kind of pushing Russia back out. It's going to be pretty tough. The U.S. has been quietly pushing those companies, but others are still having problems. India has an embargo on exporting wheat. I still don't know why my stream just dies periodically. The U.S. wants companies to ramp up purchases. So why start purchasing fertilizer from Russia if there's an embargo on everything else financial? It's all owned by oligarchs. This isn't going to help stifle the invasion. This is just going to make it more profitable. Oh, you want fertilizer from us? Oh, we'll start raising the price. Let's click the button and take us over to Markets Insider at Business Insider. This article is by Phil Rosen, Farmers harvest with their combines in a wheat field near the village of Tbilisskaya, Russia, on July 21st, 2021. Dun, dun, dun. Yeah, they're stopping Ukraine from doing it. But they can do it. That I know it's a year ago, but whatever. This year, Russian fertilizer exports dropped 24%. Remember that. Why do we need Russian fertilizer? There's more about this as things come on, as we get to them, as I go through all of the news. I'm about halfway through. So let me hurry up. The next article is over in the Law Nerd section because it's from a law school. And it's sourced into Law Nerd, but it's from AboveTheLaw.com. Quote unquote, the school feels terrible about it because, oopsie, the top law school shares student GPAs and more sensitive information with the entire student body. Let's click the link. Takes us over to Above the Law. And this is an article by Catherine Rubino. On Friday, June 3rd, 2022, at around 8 a.m., the UCLA Law Office of Career Services published a spreadsheet including student names, first law GPAs, outcomes of screener interviews, and outcomes of callback interviews for its rising 3L class to the rising 2L class in preparation for on-campus interviewing. The spreadsheet was downloadable by its Rising 2L recipients. Publishing the individually identifiable data was a mistake. However, OCS did not notice the mistake until notified by a Rising 2L student on Monday, June 6th. So all weekend long at around 12 p.m. Afterward, OCS took down the spreadsheet with the individually identifiable information and sent emails imploring the 2L students to disregard and delete the data. Yikestown, indeed, is what this article said. Yikestown. The law school administration offered the following apology and explanation for what went down. Yeah, somebody published the wrong document. That's pretty much it, I'm sure. So, through an error, the spreadsheet on the MyLaw page with this information briefly, was there for almost 4 days, contained hidden fields available on a separate tab that if clicked, it's not hidden fields on a separate tab, it's, oh gosh, this equivocation makes me flinch. This is a law school. That if clicked on, revealed a subset of student names linked to interviews and job offers they received through OCI and interview outcomes as well as their 1L GPAs. God bless America. What a catastrophe. Oh my God. Team and I fixed the spreadsheet. Yeah, it's called deleting the tab. Wow. So take this as your reminder to check all the tabs and hidden fields in a spreadsheet before you share documents. I think that's just bunk. There are no hidden fields in an Excel spreadsheet that isn't protected. Anyway, let's go on to the next article. Why are they collecting all of that data anyway? Actual answers. Keep my GPA in the system. You don't need a spreadsheet of it. Not in a spreadsheet that's getting mailed somewhere. The Fed rate hikes by 75 basis points this week. That should push the U.S. dollar to record highs, says Jefferies. The Federal Reserve will raise interest rates by 75 basis points tomorrow, said Jefferies in a note Monday. Jefferies changed its call from 50 basis points in May as the inflation reading hit a 41-year high of 8.6. Honestly, this will probably, in my estimation, it's probably going to hit 11 by November, 12 to 13 by the end of, well, no, October will be 11 by November, 12 or 13. Accounting for everything, it will probably be 12 to 13. This is understated. And the U.S. dollar index on Monday reached a fresh 20-year high of 105. The Federal Reserve this week will deliver its largest rate hike in 28 years to tackle scorching inflation, a move that should push the U.S. dollar to a fresh high against major currency rivals. Let's click the link. I think it's going to take us over to, businessinsider.com. Carla Mosey is the author of this article. You're basically not going to get, it's going to cost more to get less in the stores. Pardon my cough. Ourselves and Barclays have increased our Fed rate call to 75 basis points from 50 at this meeting, as we will not only think that the Fed should hike the rate. And see, and this is what really, really irritates me. People with money say this is a good thing. But the people who need this money don't have this money, don't have the opportunity to acquire more money. And they're told that they have to do less and work harder for it. And even return to work when gas prices are costing a gallon per hour of work, essentially, because with everything involved, you might as well just take an hour of your life and buy a gallon of gas. When it's five, almost six, in some places in California, it's bordering on $8 a gallon. These people are out of their freaking mind that this is a good thing. No, what should be happening is the society should be saying that CEO pay, their salaries are completely outstripping the reality of society. Nobody should be making $100 million a year. And if everybody just keeps on demanding these high prices for salary, then the products have to be high priced as well. And you have this circle of ever increasing value. If margins are a respected lower amount instead of just demanding 30% margins and then paying people less so that you can get those 30% margins, you have to raise the prices for goods and services. So all it is an upward trend that acquires value, or I should say just money, acquires wealth and drives it to the top while making more and more people below that threshold poor. And now we're making it harder for people to get a loan, to get a car, to go to work, let alone the price of cars themselves, $80,000 Ford Lightning EV, for crying out loud. Yeah, it starts at $40,000, but still, it's a truck. You know, I mean, $40,000 is a third of a house in some places. Don't let your mind think that your house that costs $700,000 is the average and everything's cool. It doesn't have to be that way. Yet we're also not allowing 3D printed houses from moving forward. Or we are, but it's almost glacier in nature of its adoption. We should be allowing 3D printed houses to be developed and produced, and change the mentality of what is aesthetically pleasing for a house. See how everything is connected, folks? It isn't just a silo of, oh, interest rates are going up. All of this affects everything else. It is integrated. It's all connected. The next article is over in The Word in Tech. Rune Labs' Apple Watch-based Parkinson's disease tracker gets FDA clearance. Software that helps people with Parkinson's disease track symptoms through their Apple Watch received clearance from the FDA. The company behind the tool announced today. It automatically tracks things like tremors, and it lets patients report symptoms and medication usage. So, neurology company Rune Labs built a software called Strive PD. It lets clinicians track their patients' progress and any changes in symptoms from the neurological disorder, which causes involuntary movements and difficulty with coordination. The passive data collection means patients don't have to try and remember. So, this is an article over at TheVerge.com by Nicole Wetzman. And it says Apple wrote a letter of support as part of the application, which I think is great. And I think that any software, anything that tracks Parkinson's, which is largely, it's an unknown issue, but research is underway. And we need more of this research because there are a lot of sufferers from Parkinson's. But something as simple as marijuana can calm the symptoms, but not reverse the neurological disorder. Yet it has to be something that is processed through a doctor. Even though you can buy cigarettes that give you cancer, you have to go through a doctor and be in a state that allows for smoking a joint. You know, kind of interesting, right? Cigarettes are legal, alcohol is legal, both of which are known poisons, right? You don't get intoxicated because alcohol is good for you. You get intoxicated because alcohol is a poison. And your body is processing it, and some of it gets into your brain. Same thing with cigarettes. It is toxic. It has tar and other chemicals to retard the burn rate so that you feel that you are getting your money's worth when you pay $35 for a carton of cigarettes. Or more. I'm not sure how much. How much is a carton of cigarettes nowadays? Let's see. In California. So $100. Pardon me. Well, wait. Let me redo that. So in California, it's $9.63 and $2.87 of taxes. And cigarettes will kill you. Okay, let's just move on. I'm not even going to get into this. So good luck to the Parkinson's disease tracker. The next article is a Fidelity study reveals most teens think investing is confusing, but here's how parents can help. I encourage you to teach your children how to, if you have children, or if you are a teen right now and watching this or hearing this, I think that you should learn some investing techniques and start early. Something that costs $150 in 1975 is now just shy of $1,000, around $800. So, and all it had to do was sit there. So, if you start today and you throw $150 a month into a savings fund, by the time you are working, you'll probably be able to pay for college on your own and allow your parents to enjoy their retirement. But our job is to basically make your life better. So you can maybe count on your parents supporting you. Anyway, this article is over at CNBC.com, and it's by Brett Holzhauer. A Fidelity study reveals most teens think investing is confusing. And so they go through how to talk to your kids about investing, how to build wealth, how to teach them to be responsible with their finances. It says it pays to invest at a young age. Let's say you start investing with $100 in an S&P 500 index fund every month beginning at age 16. By the time you turn 30, your total investment will be $16,800, assuming a 10% return compounded annually over the 14-year span. The value of your account would be worth $33,569.98, even if you never invested another dollar from age 30 until you turned age 60, it would be worth just shy of $600,000. And by the end of those 30 years, assuming a 10% return compounded annually, that's the power of compound interest, actually, time value of money, and interest. Or I should say even in inflation, not just interest, because you really don't know what the return on or what the interest rate is going to be, particularly if it's an index fund that's pegged to the market. There's different ways of less risk, because if you do this now and you get caught in a recession, you're kind of screwed. All of this money is going to be diluted quite a bit by the recession. It's better to, well, I mean, it's really neither here nor there at this point. You have to watch, wait and see. Set up a 529 plan, set up a Roth IRA. 529s are tax advantaged accounts for educational expenses. So you parents invest money in a 529. When your kid goes to school, you can draw from the 529 and pay for school, and it's tax-free, so, or advantaged, I should say. Pardon me. And there's all kinds of people that are going to be selling you on that kind of stuff in this article. So follow the road through Hometown over to CNBC, and you can get some more information about it. The next article is in the Mobile Channel. Battles over birth control in Missouri foreshadow a post-Roe world. Yep, gotta be real today. This next article, it says the demise of Roe v. Wade would make the need for effective birth control more urgent than ever, yet many American women still have a hard time obtaining it. That's because it isn't a guy who gets pregnant. You know, if men were the ones that are getting pregnant, you could pretty much count on, let's say we do an evolutionary swap and men suddenly have to carry a child full term. I guarantee you birth control would be the number one priority in Congress, and everybody would get it for free. And you wouldn't need anything other than, everybody would be smacking each other on the back saying, "Good job, guys. You did a great thing." And Roe v. Wade would be codified in American history forever and never even approachable. It would be turned into the battlefront like the Second Amendment is, but it isn't. It's somebody else. It's women. And so you have to fight for birth control. You have to fight for your right not to party. Don't say that. You have to fight. And those who find the value, the benefit to society in fighting for women's rights, for birth control and for their control over their own body, while the same people that are saying they want to get rid of Roe v. Wade, they are the ones that are still shouting from the hills that you can't tell me what to do with my body. I won't wear a mask. I won't get a vaccination. Yet they're telling everybody that they have to, you get raped or you have incest or you have some other thing and oops, so the birth control isn't 100% and it fails. And you still get people that say that Roe v. Wade and abortion should be outlawed. It's twisted. It's sociopathic. It's wrong. If you want to fight against a woman having control over her body, you should be required to carry a baby full term. Right? Up until a point, it's just a bundle of cells. But the moment that, you know, there's a viable entity can survive outside the body on its own, then we can talk. But until then, I think a person should always have control over their body. If they don't want to have a baby, they should not be required. And hate to break it to you all, abortion's been around a whole lot longer. There are references in history where people go and get an abortion done, and there's society might not like it, but it's there, and willful ignorance of the historical context of it actually existing remains that it goes to the powerful and influential, the rich, the landowners, the people who are in with organizations, certain organizations, and it's okay. But if you are poor or you're a single woman or whatever, you're ostracized. So there's a societal impact here, folks. And I don't think that anybody should tell anybody else what they can do with their body when it has no other impact on somebody else. The only person that has to deal with this is the woman. You know, not the other person involved, because you need two to tango. But nobody should be telling someone that they have to carry full term. So let's go on with it's a battle in Missouri over birth control. And you can read more about it. Essentially, the clinic has never performed abortions, but with the Supreme Court widely expected to revoke the constitutional right to abortion that it established in Roe v. Wade, its work has never been more essential, and its nurse practitioners and patients have never felt more threatened. Last year, the Republican-led Missouri state voted to ban taxpayer funding of two common methods of preventing pregnancy, intrauterine devices and emergency contraception, so-called morning after pill, which many abortion opponents regard as abortifacients. Okay, because they can prevent a fertilized egg from implanting in a woman's uterus. Fine. There are so many reasons to allow it. And fundamentalism is the only reason to not allow it. Again, it's the reason why people are adamant about getting vaccinations and wearing a mask is because you exhaling on someone can kill them. But I can't get you pregnant. right? If I'm pregnant, I can't get you pregnant just by walking by you. That's not how it works. And you aren't the one that's on the verge of being required to carry a full term. So there's sociological impacts here. And one is a little bit more involved than the other, but I suspect that you'll be thinking the other way if you don't like the idea of being pro-choice. And that's what it is. It's a choice to have an abortion or not. I suspect that those who have a problem with it are also struggling with sociopathy. Anyway, the next article is in the Hatch Ideas channel. Amazon to begin drone deliveries in Lockford, California this year. The shopping giant hopes to deliver parcels to shoppers by air for the first time in 2022. Let's click the link. It takes us over to bbc.com by way of co.uk, which is interesting. And these massive experimental drones. Let's see. It said it had planned to roll out the service more widely after Lockford. Users in the Californian town of Lockford will be able to... Californian? Interesting. Will be able to sign up to have thousands of goods delivered by air to their homes, it said. I can just imagine standing out there trying to catch this thing. And it wanting to move out of the way so that you can't catch it and thus get wounded by it. In December 2016, the company ran an apparent successful trial in Cambridge, UK. A package was delivered by drone in 13 minutes. I think this is awesome. I would love to have literal airmail. Let's continue on. The next article is a One Punch Man live action movie is in the works. I hope that this doesn't go the way of other live-action movies. One Punch Man is getting a live-action film adaptation through Sony Pictures that will bring the beloved bald-headed hero Saitama and his mechanical sidekick Genos to life on the big screen, according to a report from Deadline. Let's click the link. Takes us over to The Verge, and Emma Roth is the author of this. But who will play the bald-headed hero? One Punch Man is getting that live-action adaptation. Let's see, who do you think it would be? The production team sounds solid with Fast and Furious director Justin Lin on deck, along with scriptwriter Scott Rosenberg and Jeff Pinkner, who previously worked on Venom and Jumanji The Next Level, Arid Productions, a studio that has credits in Spider-Man Homecoming and live-action Ghost in the Shell, which I liked and others didn't. I will serve in the as the producers and the One Punch Man adaptation. Could go into production by end of this year. Man, if they screw this up. One Punch Man, which started out as manga in 2009, was adapted into an anime by Madhouse Productions, or Studios, sorry, in 2015 and follows Saitama's evolution into one of the world's and universe's strongest heroes. JC staff took over production for season two, but fans noticed an unfortunate dip in animation quality. And this is what I'm talking about, that if they do this wrong, the blowback from this is going to be one punch right to the chimichanga. Anyway, let's go on to the next article. Vintage Apple check for $9.18 signed by Steve Jobs expects to fetch over $25,000. There's inflation for you. I'm going to hurry up with this. This is an Apple Insider article by Amber Neely. This is a Tektronix, and it's paid to the order of Tektronix Incorporated, $9.18 from 1976. So that $9 is probably worth... probably $25, if that. Not even that. It's probably worth $9.75 now. But somebody paid $25,000 because it has Steve Jobs' name. Well, there is some serious fandom. Apple One Computer which, let's see, I don't know if they have what that went for. It's listed as number 12 on the Apple One registry. So the Apple One is anticipated to bring in over $450,000. A signed copy of a 1982. I swear I've seen all of this stuff before. The cover is anticipated to sell for a minimum of $25,000. And there's others that are there. So if you want to read more about this and take a look at that check, it's in pristine condition. This is just a beautiful check. $25,000 for a check signed by Steve Jobs. Go over and check it out. Ha ha ha. They're not all gems, folks. I just tell the jokes. The next article is in the Hatch Ideas channel. I think this will be the last one for inflation information today. Why is inflation higher in the U.S. than elsewhere? A surge in government spending drove U.S. inflation to the highest of advanced economies last year. So, okay, this is a BBC.com article by Natalie Sherman, and it's referencing the idea that the US has been throwing a ton of money, $5 trillion to $6 trillion in the last 2 years, out into the economy to offset the economic shock of the pandemic. And a lot was spent, but it's out in the system, so it's going to have to get pulled back. But people are driving up the prices right now because there's a lot of money out there. It's all getting accrued by the producers. And the producers are the people that are at the fundamental level of getting food out, acquiring food and getting it out, and oil and gas and getting it out. And since you can't take food anywhere without driving somewhere, it's the leading indicator is, to me, fuel. And so it says here, last month, inflation hit 8.6%. But it says prices jumped at an annual rate of 4.7% last year, faster than any other country in the group of seven advanced economies, according to the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development. In the UK, for example, inflation was just 2.5. But again, we don't have the social support systems that the UK has, and so their tax per person is higher, and more money is flowing into and out of their system. Whereas for us, we take a whole bunch of taxpayer money and throw it out there, or we print more and end up having to pay back more, and we impact our dollar value. CPI goes up, cost of living goes up. But all of that wealth gets accrued at the top because it doesn't get paid back into the system. It gets exploited in a way to provide to generate more money off of the money itself. It doesn't go into social systems at the same rate that it does in the UK. So the UK basically is paying it out, getting it back, paying it out, getting it back. But you don't have, as far as I understand it, the same level of millionaires and billionaires that the US has. And that actually is a good thing. Why? Because that doesn't create a disparity between opportunity and what the future might hold for people. Right now, the 99% is getting squeezed further down in terms of the disparity between that 1% and the rest of the 99. Why? Because the producers are in the 1%. They're the ones that are getting the most money out of this, because the people who were given money during the pandemic bought goods, and that went into the CEO pay and bonus. That's why all of these companies have massive record profits during the pandemic. It literally went straight from the people who need it the most to the people who do not need it at all, let alone the most. And it really should have been the products and services purchased given to the people, and then that money put right back into the system, not into private hands, but it was bought and paid for by the government and doled out to people. And then that money would have been taxed at a different rate because it would have been purchased by the government. And you do it special. You do a special process so that it can be acquired again. Whatever was purchased was at a different rate because it was government contracting. But that brings us to FAR, rules and regulations for government contracting, purchasing goods and services and all of that kind of stuff. It's much more complex, and it would have been mitigated, this funneling of $5 trillion out into private hands, if it would have been done in a different way with a different type of economic system that wasn't strictly capitalist. Right now, the way that it works is all of that money just went into private hands, and now it's controlled entirely by those who already have millions or billions of dollars. And now we're all paying the price, but it's unbalanced. The people who need the most are going to pay a higher price because they can't weather a storm of 12% interest or inflation. But a person with billions that's invested across a broad swath of risks, they can take a 12% inflation hit because their money is just making more money. It's not doing any other good. And I'm willing to talk about this with other people. I've heard this all before. Well, it's not like the money's just sitting there. No. You don't understand. That money literally does need to still be available. Just because the person has enough that they can let it linger and not be straight cash doesn't mean anything to me. Why? Because a billionaire can sit there and liquidate stuff and walk away with billions of dollars in cash. They just don't, because they know that their money is making money. And is that money making money for somebody else? Yes. Ultimately, is it going to a person in need? Absolutely not. Is it helping the society, the economy, or anything? No, absolutely not. It's helping individuals at various strata. Is it making a whole bunch of millionaires somewhere? Possibly. But what is the good that's coming of it? Understand what I'm saying? Things are very expensive because people are demanding a return on their investment. That's why people can't get a loan for something, because they can choose what the risk level is, that the people that are providing the money, and they go, well, I don't like your numbers. And that makes me feel like it's too risky. Well, if the valuations across the board were lower, then people would be able to pay for stuff. But that's not how it is. Just go look and try and buy a car. When it takes an entire year of salary, you can't eat anything else, you can't pay for mortgage, you can't do anything, just to buy a $30,000 car. Well, go buy a used car. Oh, okay, so now my car is going to break down all the time because it's a used car, and that's what they do. They break down more. So I can't have a warranty in my car because I can't afford a $30,000 car. Got it. See, there's a lot of parts that people just ignore. And again, willing to talk about it. You may not want to talk to me about it, though. Come and talk to me. The next article and the last one for today is in the Hatch Ideas channel. Meta, Google, and Twitter are set to face huge fines if they don't tackle deepfakes and fake accounts on their platform. Tech firms could soon be forced by the EU to police manipulative behaviors on their platforms. This would include deepfakes and fake accounts, as per EU code of conduct seen by Reuters. Companies could face multi-billion dollar fines if they fail to comply with the code. And to some degree, I think this is good and bad. The cat is out of the bag, so to speak. This is an article over at businessinsider.com by Isabel Asher Hamilton. In It's something that I actually have a very big interest in, which are deep fakes and photorealistic graphics and hyper-realistic audio. And that's because I have a channel that I want to bring here to Twitch and to YouTube and as a podcast called Reality Hacker. It's really hard to be an audio-based podcast for something like this, but it might be doable. And the idea here is Reality Hacker is all about deep fakes and photo manipulation, hyper-realistic audio manipulations. More than a decade ago, I used software that a bunch of us created in our classroom to create synthesized voices that were, I would argue, you would have to be the NSA to tell the difference between what we put together and a real voice. And you would have to get a super clean audio recording of it to do that. Even that kind of discovery that it was fake. Now with deep fake videos and this audio manipulation techniques, you can create somebody who isn't the other person, isn't the real person. Literally, there's a website called This Person Doesn't Exist, and now you can do that with audio as well. And if you just wire it up, you can basically create a video of somebody saying things that either doesn't exist or is an exact duplicate of a person that's real. So it says, adopt, reinforce, and implement clear policies regarding impermissible manipulative behaviors and practices on their products based on the latest evidence on the conducts and tactics, techniques, and procedures employed by malicious actors. Basically, this is the video and audio version of cybersecurity. Companies must deploy solutions that defend their networks from illegal, unauthorized access, or the exfiltration of personally identifiable information. This in the EU is basically saying you have to do the same thing with exfiltrated, or I should say, outward-facing audio and video. You must defend the network, the internet, from these type of things. And I really appreciate the EU's mentality on this because I think that the US should have the right to be forgotten. I don't like the idea that even though I don't have an account that I even touch anymore on Facebook, they're still tracking me through beacons on people's websites. Because it can still be attached. It just can. You may think it can't be, but it can be. You have a machine profile that is letting various stakeholders know that you exist on a site, even here on Apple Insider. I don't have my data, what I normally process here, installed on this browser, but I can go to on other browsers to other websites, and they tell me, it shows me how many beacons and trackers and whatnot is on there, so that I can see which websites are really just overboard on their data acquisition. Some websites that I go to have like 100 elements that are telling some other organization who and what and how long and where I'm coming from and all kinds of stuff. And Google isn't necessarily the biggest offender. It's just one of many that are informing people of who and what I'm doing. I'm not fond of my privacy being invaded. And the right to be forgotten allows me to disappear in terms of search engines. And I think it should be extended to companies where if I notify the company that my information must be purged, it should be purged. If I can do that with people, then I can do that with companies, but that's not how it happens. Information is still siphoned off to companies as I surf the net. And when I say I can do that with people, I can take my stuff when I break up with someone and I can stop communicating with them. And the only way that they can know anything about me is if they're stalking me. And guess what? That's illegal. But you're stalked online. So through trackers and stuff like that on websites. Yeah. It's free, but sometimes it's out of control about the number of trackers and tracking in general. Anyway, we'll see what happens with this EU and the ability to control deepfakes outside of the EU. It's going to be a tough call, and they're really heavy-handed about it. If they don't want you doing it, they will basically block your company. You're not allowed to do business here in the EU because you're not following the rules. Okay, so the next, that's it for today. I am done. I always go back to the front page. And remember, my aggregator is running 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, getting the news into one spot so you don't have to. And it gets aggregated into six categories: create, news, education, entertainment, social, and technology. Technology is the biggest of the bunch because, well, I'm really into tech. With that in mind, I will see you tomorrow. I'm going to try and get something going today later on if you are interested. Get in touch. Send me a text send me a message in Twitch or in YouTube or via Apple or Google Play or Spotify, or I'm everywhere all the time. I'll see you. Bye-bye.